This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
It is Saturday afternoon, and it is 2 o'clock. I think I'm right in saying yes, I better just check. Yes, it is 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a fabulous Saturday afternoon. You're on Joy 94.9, and the time being what it is this afternoon means only one thing, and that is it's time for another hour of All Things Motoring. You are listening to Fender Bender. My name is Daniel. I know it's not Tim. Occasionally he does have these little sabbaticals, and he goes off to do important things. You will be having to put up with my dulcet tones for another hour, and many thanks to the, quite frankly, fabulous Pete Dillon. Thank you so much, Pete, for another wonderful edition of Cravings. Is making me a little bit peckish, which is why I'm wearing my hot dog shirt in the studio. I won't be doing the show alone, you'll be very pleased to hear. The studio is virtually busting at the seams with quality personalities. I am joined by a regular to the Fender Bender team, Fionn. Very, very lovely to have you back with us, Fionn.
Good to be here. Hello, Joy listeners.
Superb. Are you well?
Very well, yes.
Busy? It's an extraordinarily busy time of year.
It is for us automotive journalists. It does get pretty busy this time of year, but I'm looking forward to a bit of R&R towards Christmas.
So you are, of course, talking about Fender Bender. That is your rest and recuperation from it's the only way that we relax.
It is very cathartic, I must admit, yes.
Oh, that's very kind of you. Less so with me at the helm for this week.
Nonsense.
And we are also joined by the fabulous Mike Stevens of Motor Report. Thank you so much for coming in. Yeah, it's not your first time on Fender Bender, but it certainly is with me sitting in this position.
It is, yeah, my second time now, so thanks for having me back.
Excellent. Well, you know, people are still talking about the first time.
Well, so feels like a little bit of an endorsement to be invited back. So
Absolutely it is. And likewise, also, you must be very busy. I read your coverage loyally, and you look like you've been busier than most of us, actually.
Yeah, well, you know, there's no rest for the wicked, as they say. It is a cliched pun, but I do enjoy it.
Excellent. We are all completely wicked. It is also definitely worth a mention for the fabulous Chris, who is panelling for us today. In the absence, I say it every time I'm anchoring, generally people keep me away from machinery. I happen to have this effect, which is called a smoke leak, which is where anything electronic, if I get near it, the smoke that is hacked into the machine at the beginning of its life leaks out whenever I go near electronics. So we will leave the panelling over to Chris. Thank you so much, and let's get straight into it. It has been another busy week. Us professional motor journalists, we make it sound like it's a chore, but we've had plenty to look at this week. And probably the news at the top of the list is the announcement that Ford is indeed to pull out of V8 supercar racing. Yeah. People had been speculating. There were rumours flying around. Ford said absolutely categorically we're in it for this year, and I believe they're saying next
2015. Yeah, they'll wind it back a little bit through next year and then out completely at the end of that,
and that's it. Goodbye, so, Ford from V8 supercars. Now how do you feel about that, boys? Does it strike any kind of emotion with you at all, or
in a nostalgia sense? Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk out of school as a motoring journo, but I'm not a huge fan of the series, but I understand that it really would hit right at the heart for a lot of fans, you know, that Holden and Ford rivalry decades. So it's sad in that sense, absolutely.
Yeah, but go on, Finn.
I concur. Yeah, I think there's a lot of history
there. You can't do that to the whole show. You can't just say, yeah, what he said.
Well, I completely disagree. No.
Esteemed colleague.
No, it is a big shame. And basically Ford said, we're pulling out because we have a finite amount of funds and we need to invest this in marketing new cars that are coming up, the new Mondeo, the new Everest SUV, the new Mustang. So they're basically pulling their cash out and putting it somewhere else. The thing is, there will be the teams that run the Ford cars, they will still continue. They'll just probably run different cars, and they're looking at trying to get other manufacturers in. So who knows, we might see a Hyundai, we might see a Kia, we might see a Lexus running in V8 supercars. You never know.
There have been big changes to the regulations from 2017 that they'll be welcoming coupes, 4 and 6 cylinder engines, I presume turbocharged, to keep turbos up. They all have to be rear wheel drive, so they're obviously still a little bit scared of the GTR.
But it means they can do burnouts still.
It does mean, and you know, maybe we'll see some power sliding. I don't know.
The GTR, of course, having four-wheel drive, massive unfair advantage.
That's right. But it would pass the regulations in every other way. It's a twin turbo six, it's a coupe, etc. But so it does mean that we'll see, Ultima and Mercedes and all of those cars continuing through. But as Fionn says, we might also see the Hyundai Genesis, which is just launched here.
And is that good for the sport? Do we think generally? Because, for years, I mean, certainly all the years I've been in Australia, I've regarded the V8 Supercar League as, forgive me, just a little bit of a bogan sport. Go to Bathurst.
How dare you?
Go to Bathurst and just do a quick sort of check of the clientele, and I'm not even sure that's a particularly fair term to use. I would be forgiven for saying there is a certain demographic that likes to go to V8 Supercars. Do you think that this embracing of lots of different brands and different types of vehicle, different segments, brings a different sort of supporter to V8 Supercar?
Oh, it would have to, absolutely. Mm. I mean, I don't know that I'll ever be a committed fanatic of the sport, but I'm more interested now that there is a wider range of brands represented. And you're quite right that when it was Holden and Ford, there is that image that it's specifically for bogans. So maybe said audience is not too wrapped about seeing AMG cars running around the track.
We are all being way too diplomatic about this, I'm sure. I'm sure most of the V8 Supercar supporters would just say, yeah, we're a bunch of bogans. That's absolutely fine.
Probably.
That's what we like.
Who knows?
Yes. Oh, well, we'll watch this space. It's exciting, though, because I think Australia does need a bit of a mix-up with its motorsport. Mm. And, you know, you'll still have Holden still in it. You've still got that if you want to be loyal to an Australian brand.
Mm. It's a shame in a way, though, I think, that Ford has pulled out, because the Mustang is coming in, and it's partly because of that, you know, that they need to focus on the marketing for that. But seeing the Mustang out on the track would have been unreal.
The giant wing and huge...
Oh. Yep.
Flared guards, that would have been fantastic.
Yeah, it would have been insane.
Totally insane. Agreed. Totally agreed. Well, we've mentioned Hyundai once already. Moving on into other news, V-Facts were out earlier this week. So
V-Facts, for those who don't know, is the monthly sales of cars.
Yeah. So it's like a score sheet.
It's the leaderboard, isn't
so
it?
So all of the sales people in Australia pour over VFACTS whenever they come out every month to see how they're doing. And the big news this month is that Hyundai is number two.
Yes. Two or three?
Okay, well, it's three. Moved up a spot.
I think Holden's two and Toyota's first.
Yeah. Sorry, thank you.
So Hyundai surpassed Mazda for the third position by about 680 sales, I think. I'm not sure how many they had to gain to pass by that much. But it's obviously huge news for Hyundai, because they've been on the march for quite a while now, and they've got some serious aspirations in the market. There are some questions about what they did to achieve third place. There are some rumours around that maybe...
here we go. I like the wry smile you've got on your face. There's a conspiracy here.
Well, there is a bit of talk that perhaps dealers were lining up a few extra registrations without buyers to get it across the line. But in fairness, it's not unusual. Every brand does it everywhere, every now and then. And in Mazda's defense, they still have been performing quite well, but they had a stock shortage on the Mazda 2.
Right.
And they reckon that would have had around an extra 2,000 sales for them.
Oh, wow. So. Right. So Hyundai clearly been watching the figures very closely, and they would have thought, if we just give ourselves a little bit of a boost over the line, then we could go up a spot.
Yeah.
And that clearly paid off. As you say, all of the manufacturers, whether they would all deny it, definitely.
Of course.
But
I'm certainly not saying they did it.
Okay. We are just reporting a report. That's absolutely fine.
That's right.
That's what we do as journalists. We never commit to anything. Look, everyone is just as guilty of doing it at some point, I'm certain, and it's not illegal, so...
No.
So anyway,
what car
do we reckon has done this other than any sort of underhanded alleged...
I think i30's really pushed through.
It is, isn't it? My X35 is still a very strong seller there.
iX35, huge,
small SUV.
i20's
well.
Popular.
i20.
I think iX35 is the top-selling compact SUV.
I think it might be,
which I don't really think it's a compact SUV myself.
Yes, then we get into that tenuous... Yeah. And
if it's selling really well in the compact SUV segment, maybe because it's a lot more spacious than an actual compact SUV.
Yeah. another conspiracy.
So number one is still Toyota. They've been number one for a gazillion years, and they probably always will be. They have a huge amount of market share, and I think that's a lot through their reputation too. They just have this, you know, everybody thinks Toyota, it's reliable, they're affordable, and they run forever. Let's get one.
Absolutely. However, it'll be interesting to see how that figure is affected when they eventually pull out of Australian production in 2017. You know, there's a certain amount of loyalty around it, and I think we'll see that affected by the figures, but we'll have to wait and see what happens there.
Yeah, I mean, Toyota's image as a reliable brand is I mean, it's had, like every other brand, it's had quite a number of recalls over the past few years, but it just doesn't seem to impact them.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah. They are a law unto themselves, pretty much. We are going to take a very quick break, but we will be coming back for some international news after this. If you want to get in touch, we welcome messages from our listeners. You can get in touch via text 0427JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Let us know whether you just think everything we're talking is absolute rubbish, or if you agree in some form. We're completely open to all suggestions. You're listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. I'm joined in the studio by Fionn and Mike. We're having a fabulous time talking all things cars. Before the break, we were talking local news, but now we're going to go overseas and talk about a very exciting thing that we have seen this week. I'm going to say Aston Martin, gentlemen, and I'll just leave that with...
007.
How do we fit? Exactly. As soon as you think Aston Martin...
It's James Bond.
It is, isn't it?
Secret agent car, you know, rockets folding out of the sides. You've got caltrops off the back, you know.
You've got what? Hang on.
The oil guns and ejector seats.
What was that term you just used?
Caltrops.
What is that?
The Mitsubishi logo.
It's like dropping thumbtacks, but they're like spiky balls.
How do you know this?
I think it's a...
He's obsessed with warfare.
Is it a little bit of that? Yes. I do like James Bond and gadgets and things like that. I'm a nerd, basically.
Do you have your own car, Fionn?
Yes, I do.
What do you own?
I own a...
You bought Stavros.
No.
For those of you who are not familiar with this term, Stavros is Tim's car, his Mitsubishi coupe.
That he sold recently,
very sadly, and he did shed a tear. So you didn't buy Stavros from Tim?
No. I've had a Commodore for a while, so...
And does it have...
Viva la V8 supercars,
well
mate.
Commodore. Very patriotic of you. Have you installed any Bond-like gadgets?
No, it's pretty filthy.
Okay, so. All right, good. Well, that in itself is... It's a disguise.
It's a sleeper. It's got a pretty pumping V6.
Radar absorbing filth on it, so you can
pretty
evade.
Much, yeah.
Okay.
I can evade everything. So.
Well, are you thinking of upgrading to the Aston Martin DB10? DB10. We have broken two figures now with the DB suffix, and
I'm going to get one.
Absolutely.
Because they're probably
one of the 10 that they're going to make.
$8 million each.
Probably.
I mean, why not?
They've said that they'll make 10. They haven't said why. I imagine it's because every film that has a starring car, they smash a bunch of them. So they might keep one for their museum. I doubt they'll be available to customers. Maybe after the film. If you want one with speed holes.
Isn't that actually... Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's
speed holes.
Speed holes.
Bring it on.
Speed holes. Is that... Or bullet holes.
Well, same thing.
Yeah.
Unless it's The Simpsons, in which case it's a pickaxe.
Yeah, of course. Now, we've seen pictures of this. It is an absolutely ridiculously good-looking thing, in my opinion. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. You're fully welcome to disagree with me.
No, I agree.
I think it's stunning. I've had friends describe it as underwhelming, sadly. It is a little bit of a departure from a few classic Aston Qs. The headlights are now running horizontally instead of up into the bonnet and things like that. But overall, I think it's a stunning car. I've always preferred understated styling.
It's a sleek sort of...
It really is.
It's always a simple design. But look it up on Google. Aston Martin DB10.
Well,
see what you think.
It's in a sort of a satin colour, isn't it? Which seems to be all the rage.
Some sort of gunmetal. Satiny.
What an appropriate colour. A lot of cars are called gunmetal in their colour, but this one is one you probably get away with calling it gunmetal. It's a Bond car.
You would.
Yeah.
We've yet to see any sort of gadgets that it's got, but obviously it will be it'll be dripping with weaponry and some kind of. Well, of course.
They finally reintroduced Q in the most recent film, so I would think he'll have a bit of a field day on the new Aston.
Oh, and just quickly, it's for the new Bond movie called Spectre, which is coming out.
Sorry, we should have said that.
November 2015, just before the new Star Wars movie. Can't wait for that too. But anyway.
But there's a little bit of controversy surrounding this, and everyone expects Bond to drive an Aston Martin or something British. You know, there were those few years when he drove a Beamer, which was very weird.
Mm-hmm. He has driven a Citroen.
He has.
Yes.
Rumour has it that apparently he will be at some point in a Fiat 500 in this next movie.
Yeah.
How do we feel about that?
Disgusted.
I don't quite get it. The car's pretty old now, the Fiat 500, and it'll be even older by the time the new Bond film comes out.
That's true.
It is selling really well in Australia at the moment. It's obviously a very popular car.
It's a pretty cool car, in a way.
Driving it is a little bit like driving a van, the seating position.
But putting Daniel Craig, this muscle-bound beast, in this tiny little car, he's just going to pop out of it.
Muscle-bound beast.
Well, he's pretty
buff. He's not that pumped, is he? I don't know.
I can't get the image of him in those tiny little shorts coming out of the water.
There we go.
That is now I can't do the thing.
Yeah, it's got to be one of the most famous Bond images of all time.
Of course, yeah.
But look, it could be that, you know, the Fiat 500 is used in some crazy chase scene, and it could be very cool. We don't know.
Well, there was in, I think, Quantum of Solace, a Ford Car, KA, which we no longer get in Australia, not that generation anyway.
Shame.
It is a shame. Cool-looking little thing, which is actually mostly, I think, a Fiat underneath, a 500. So there's a weird connection there as well, anyway. Mm. So he has driven bizarre, weird little things before that you wouldn't normally associate with Bond.
Yeah, and there's a sort of tongue-in-cheek humour element. You know, there's always corny jokes in Bond films. That's part of it. And, you know, seeing 007 in a funny little jelly mold car like that.
You can imagine him running out of a hotel or something in the middle of a chase and looking around for a car that he can pinch and sees that and just grimaces.
In nothing but
really?
A towel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Although maybe the Fiat is like somehow ejected out of the Aston Martin.
Whoa. Now you're talking.
Perhaps it's like a second car in the first Bond car.
Spawns another car, shoots it out.
That totally would
be. That would be beyond the beyond the pale for me, I think. But
nothing at all. This is Bond we're talking about. 007, they can do anything in that weird lab where they shoot things and blow stuff up.
Might
without
be the
any
last
kind of safety
Bond film
screens
if they try
at all.
A trick like that.
We just have to quickly each mention our favourite Bond car through the years.
Sure.
And also ask the readers, the listeners, what they think is their best Bond car. What was yours, Mike?
It's one of the more recent ones, but DBS for me, Aston Martin DBS.
DBS.
Okay, yes.
Mine was the AMC Hornet, which was from the 70s. It's a big American muscle car, and it did a corkscrew jump through the air. It was a real stunt, most amazing stunt ever.
Cool
Love
jump,
it.
Bro.
Yep.
I am going to be mildly controversial, just because it makes good radio, you know, what can I say? I liked the Ferrari 355 that he raced against when he had the Aston.
Oh, you went for the villain.
I did.
Oh,
I did.
Damn,
Ferrari 355 is probably my, with the exception of the F40, the 355 is my favourite Ferrari.
But some hat tips, though. I mean, there was a Toyota 2000 GT in there, which is, you know, one of those legendary cars that has never been reborn, unlike most cars. That submarine Lotus.
Oh, the Lotus is
that
brilliant.
Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla Motors, has bought.
Yes.
Don't know what he intends to do with that.
Make love in it, I think.
or to it,
Undertus.
Maybe. I'm not
sure.
Yeah,
that works. Yeah.
Okay, so in the past, he's had things like BMWs, which, you know, we did mention that previously.
Brosnan, for a few films.
He had a BMW 7 Series. There was
Z4.
Z4.
And Z3.
Yes, actually, good point. Which was the one that got cut in half by the spinning discs underneath the helicopter? That was so far-fetched. I loved it.
Yeah, I do like that.
How do we feel about him when he gets in a car that is not British? Is that acceptable? Is it?
It's acceptable, but it's frowned upon, shall we say.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And so in that context, it's no surprise that Aston has revealed a brand new car for him to drive, because their current range is getting a little bit old.
Okay, then. Great. What would we suggest that he gets in, then? If we could dictate to Bond...
An F-Type.
Jag.
Time for a Jag.
Bingo.
Yeah, that works.
Bingo. I was hoping this segment was going to last longer, but we've just, that's it. That's it. We've gone to it. No, in fairness. I mean, what other Jags have we got? Can we see him in an XF?
The new XE, the R version.
Yes,
the little compact V8, sedan.
Which is on its, we've got, the XE, which is the BMW 3 Series competitor. Mm.
Hot little thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is the XK still around? I don't think so.
Because they did an XK. Okay.
They're going to redo it, apparently.
XKR, yep.
Yep.
Yeah. But let's think further afield. Could you see him in a Range Rover, for example?
Well, they've used them. M gets ferried around in a Range Rover.
There was a Defender in one of the previous two, I think.
Okay.
At the start. They were in Africa, and he's chasing this guy along. Anyway.
Yeah.
I digress.
You were in the zone for a moment.
I was in the zone.
It was quite nice to see that.
Reliving it.
I would prefer that they always be British, and so I guess that's the end of my list, really.
I'd like to see maybe a Morris 1000 from about 30 years ago.
Oh, stop. And we were saying a Fiat 500 was absurd.
Yeah, but it's Italian, you know. You can have it.
We could have a new Italian job scene in James Bond in a Cooper JCW or something like that.
We need to write a script, mate.
I think so.
Well, let's get on to
something.
I love the way this is going. Okay, one more suggestion for you. Rolls-Royce Wraith.
Oh, yes.
What do you think?
Great idea, Dan.
I think so. Because, you know, this is probably the most sporty Rolls-Royce we've ever seen.
Yes.
Certainly of our generation.
It's a vast coupe. Mm. It's got so many cool... It would look great. It's very photogenic. It would look great in film.
Yeah.
And if you could get one of those sideways, then that would probably be one of the coolest...
Well, that raises Bentley as well, obviously. Continental GT.
Now we're talking.
And they have those sort of...
So many more British cars than I thought.
Those bullnose front ends. They'd be like a battering ram. You could drive through walls and, you know, save people.
We'll be back next week with a script, friends.
Yep. I like the way this is going.
Stay tuned.
We are super creative. I think we can actually hold this down. okay, so we're going to have to move on because that was Bond. But you did briefly mention the Italian Job in there and some other iconic cars. Let's push this out there. I love your idea. I want to hear from our listeners. What is the ultimate Bond car, both past, present, and future? If you can give a suggestion as to what Bond should be driving, then let us know, 0427JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. But I'm going to broaden this. We're going to talk about general movie cars, iconic movie cars.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now then, the one which sticks in my mind for good and bad is the Miura in The Italian Job, because you put that up. Lamborghini Miura.
The original supercar.
Absolutely. And probably one of the prettiest cars that has ever graced the planet.
How many cars have eyelashes?
Exactly. You buy those awful stick-on ones for cars now, which are the most absurd. Yeah.
Do you think everybody's thinking Miura when they buy those?
If you are someone listening now and you have eyelashes on your car, and this is Joy.
Please tune in.
So there's every chance that one of our listeners could be doing that. Please don't text, because I don't want to hear from you. No, okay, so my pick, so Italian Job, the reason I love that film, the Miura, is because any chance to hear and see a Miura is fantastic.
It's a Lamborghini, by the way.
It is.
Yep.
But they killed it. They drove it into the tunnel and crashed it.
They did.
And they actually, that was a
real... Was it a legit Miura?
It was. Mm. It was. It was a shell. They gutted it, so all the important bits were out, but they actually destroyed
it was an actual body.
A Miura. And, I mean, the value of a Miura...
Do you get depressed about that? I do. Anytime I see... Even the guys on certain British variety show, whenever they crash a famous car, you know, there's only so many of them left, guys, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely
respect.
Right. Yeah, I remember one of the presenters of that show talking about years ago destroyed a 911. Mm. And at the time, they were to a penny in the UK, and even so, I can't bear to see classic cars being wantonly destroyed.
You watch Mad Max now, and you see all the Falcons they went through, and you just think, well, you know, there were plenty of them around at the time, but that's a lot of Falcons we can't have anymore.
Yeah. Absolutely right. Well, now you mentioned Mad Max.
There's an iconic car. I was just going to say, I did watch Need for Speed recently on a flight somewhere. Amazing movie, magical. You have to see it. I'm being sarcastic, but they destroyed Bugatti Veyrons and Pagani Huayras, and it was.
Now the pronunciation of these cars is.
Yeah, actually, I didn't.
I'm not even sure if that's correct, but it's got we in it, so.
Does it? Because I always struggle with that because it's H.
Huayra.
Yeah, I think it's Huayra.
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 I'm going to go with Huayra.
Do it.
But anyway,
so Mad Max. Obviously, I was talking about Mad Max only earlier this evening, this morning, because that is an iconic car. But not only, it's profoundly Australian.
Yep.
And I actually had to recently say what would be my dream car. And in a moment of unprecedented inspiration, I said the Mad Max car. And which, of course,
what is it the Interceptor or is that the yellow ones?
No, it's well, in the show they call it an Interceptor. Yeah. But it's
the Falcon Coupe.
So what were the yellow ones called? Those cop cars, the Highway Patrol ones.
They were Chargers, were they?
Or they were XE.
No, they were Falcons as well.
They were.
Yeah. They were XE, weren't they?
XB,
and the G. Oh, we're going to sound like such a bunch of geeks. We just
my dad would know.
Fender Bender is not going to descend into just us saying letters to our listeners, okay? No. That is not good radio.
But look, Batmobile. Michael Keaton's Batmobile.
Oh, Batmobile.
It's not a real car. I think it's like a Chev or something underneath, but that's mine. Yeah. And when he shoots out that grappling hook to turn around a corner by grabbing onto a light pole, I think that was that car.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But I would like to go through every one of these scenes you mentioned and pull them to shreds by saying exactly why that isn't possible for so many reasons.
Well, I saw it when I was 10 years old. I wouldn't have done it then. I know I would now. For sure. Yeah.
Superb. Well, keep the text coming in. We do want to know what your favourite iconic movie car is. And we also want to know your suggestions for Bond cars. Any wacky and extreme suggestions welcomed. 0427JOY949 is the text. Or you can email onair@joy.org.au. I have had a message in from the lovely Graham who says, just experienced driving friend's Holden Cruise. Best advice I can give is never buy one under any circumstances. I'm merely reading from the screen.
So is that to be a Bond car? Is that?
That would be unreal.
I'm not sure whether that is a suggestion as a Bond car. Perhaps it's just advice across the board. Graham, if you'd like to text in on 0427JOY949 with a little bit more detail as to why this scathing review, scathing one-line review has arrived on my computer.
Might have an ejector seat. It just might not be intentional. I don't know.
Then please do get in touch. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back straight after this. You're listening to Fender on Joy 94.9. No Tim at the helm this week. I'm sorry about that. You're going to have to put up with Dan for, you know, my little celebrity jaunt into the Studio One. Before the break, we were talking about movie cars, iconic movie cars, the Bond cars of the past and present. And we were asking our dear listeners to let us know their suggestions for their favourite movie cars. And I've had a message in from one of our listeners saying, oh, how did we miss this one before? Lady Penelope's car from Thunderbirds.
Yes, absolutely.
And it was a pink limousine?
It was about 40 wheels?
Yeah, it took, so the, cool. It took the term limousine to an absolute stratospheric height. Yeah, it was absolutely absurd. And the number plate, what was it?
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
Fab One, so Chris says. Fantastic. And speaking of Chris, our resident panellist for the day, Chris told us what his favourite movie car was, and it was the 71 Mustang from Goldfinger. Diamonds of Forever, sorry. That is an iconic car.
You just wanted to say Goldfinger, didn't you?
Goldfinger.
And the man with the golden bum as well.
This is true.
That was an absolute classic. 71 Mustang.
But it does raise all of those film Mustangs as well. Eleanor from Gone in 60 Seconds, McQueen's Bullet Mustang as well. Yep. And it is, as Fian said earlier, a very, very photogenic car.
And worth mentioning very quickly that the Mustang, the next generation, is coming to Australia.
At last.
Returning. Next year.
Yeah. Next year. Very exciting
late.
Stuff.
Very late next year, apparently.
Anyway, keep the messages coming in. 0427 Joy 949 is the text. Or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Let us know what is your most iconic movie car. But we're moving on now. We're going to talk about something that I drove recently.
What have you driven?
Well, okay. I'll give you a little bit of a backstory.
So it got four wheels.
You've seen it already. okay, so Lexus. We mentioned them briefly. They are considering moving into V8 supercar. Some people think that is a good idea. Others think it probably won't bring much value to the brand at all. Whatever they decide to do, we definitely know is they are trying to branch out and capture a new audience. Traditionally, Lexus has been associated with luxury, comfort, and very good customer service. They've built their brand over the last 25 years on those things alone. But now what they have agreed they need to do is attract maybe a more younger and sports-focused owner. They're going to try and
Hoons.
Do it, but say again?
Hoons.
it's funny. They didn't use that word in there. It's strange. Now, I don't know why. But they want to retain. They're desperate to not alienate that core, loyal group of customers who associate, you know, the comfort and the luxury of what Lexus have done so well.
Yeah. Prudent.
But now they want to equally attract a more sporty customer. And the way they are going to do that is with the car that has just arrived in Australia, the RC350. So it's loosely based on the IS, which is a relatively sporty sedan, 3-series competitor, Mercedes C-Class, but this is the coupe version. Now, they say that it's not really based on the IS because it's got the front end of the 350.
I think rear end rear is the of the IS. GS or the front.
Yeah,
there's some GS in there.
Front is the GS, rear is the IS, and there's a bit in the middle as well.
It's the old IS convertible in the middle.
That's right, yeah. So it's a bit of a mishmash. And the result is a very striking-looking coupe, two-door.
Well, we should say to readers, we're not talking exterior. You're not going to see a GS front and an IS rear.
Sorry.
The architecture underneath the car.
Yeah.
it's not some bizarre Photoshop
Frankenstein. People listening on the radio going, what on earth have they done?
Franken-car.
They aren't going to attract young people. They'll only attract, well, I don't know, vision impaired people, probably.
Hoons.
I would argue that it will anyway, but go on.
Now then, the RC350. At the moment, we've only got one specific variant. It's powered by a 3.5-litre, normally aspirated V6. Very good engine.
Pretty
too.
Gutsy thing, that, isn't it?
It is, and it's very nice because it's not turbocharged. It's very revvy. It likes to sit around its red line, which is.
And response.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it sounds fantastic, albeit maybe some of that is piped into the cabin. But the key issue here, now I drove it, I spent the day in various different levels of specification. My favourite was the F Sport, which is the one. It's got variable dampers, it's got variable steering geometry.
No extra power, just no suspension power. Handling all
but
that
the
sort
thing
of
it does have, which makes a huge difference, it's got that clever rear wheel steering system.
Ah, that's right, the dynamic
steering.
I love
steering. That stuff.
Very good, very clever system. At low speeds, it turns the, below 80 kilometres an hour, it turns the rear wheels the opposite direction to the front, so you effectively get a tighter turning circle.
Good for parking.
Very good. But like then, what it does is, cleverly, above 80, it then turns the wheels the same direction as the fronts. So what you get is a kind of partial crabbing turn. So when you're on the freeway,
that sounds dangerous.
You don't want to get too close to the old crabbing. If you know what I mean?
No, that sounds odd.
Avoid that wherever possible, I would say. So so when you're on a freeway and you want to change lane, the car actually doesn't turn on its axis. It just sort of slides
along sideways.
Yeah, isn't that bizarre? And it's a very strange sensation.
I've got to have a go at that.
Yeah, it's very clever. Anyway, when you're up and about and you're putting down some pace, It's a surprisingly good car. You know, I think they really are doing the right thing here. It is genuinely a sporty drive. Perhaps not up on BMW's 4 Series, which is their now renamed 3 Series Coupe. BMW really are the leader when it comes to really sharp, everyday handling coupes.
They are good.
However, the RC is coming close, and it's a little bit cheaper than all of its competitors.
So it is. It's really well priced, and that is its selling point for sure.
Absolutely.
The new C-Class Coupe isn't out yet, but against the BMW 4 Series, as is often the case with a Lexus, it is very competitively priced.
Yeah.
What are the seats like? Is it comfortable?
I personally thought the driving position was fantastic. Part of a coupe is its looks. That's what a coupe is supposed to do. People who drive coupes openly acknowledge they will happily sacrifice a little bit of practicality for having a car that looks better than its sedan equivalent, if there is one. The second thing for me in a coupe is having that coupe typical driving position. You know, you've got, because the engine's out front and you've got a rear drive, it gives you nice deep footwells where you can put these bloody lanky things, which cause me nightmare.
Wish I had lanky ones.
Yeah, they're a pain when it comes to budget airlines, but sure, in a coupe, that's when these things come into their own. Yeah. And the driving position is fantastic. The seats are wonderful. In the F Sport, you get a slightly sportier seat, a little bit firmer, more support. I had an absolute ball. I mean, I think they've really got their work cut out, because generally speaking, sporty prestige coupes, they've got a very loyal customer base, and to try and pull them away with a brand that is trying to reinvent itself to a certain degree is going to be a task and a half. However, getting a great product on the ground and pricing it sharply is half the battle.
It makes a big difference. And for the power that it produces, I think the equivalent BMW price-wise is the entry-level 420i, which is like 100 kilowatts less or something. Significant difference in power.
Absolutely. So if you're after... Go on, Fionn.
What price are we talking for the entry-level?
I think it's 66.
That sounds about right. Yeah. The F-Sport is a little bit more, so that's up to over 70, I think.
I thought it was higher than that, but yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll get one in about 30 years' time then. Excellent.
Yes, well, obviously, journalists, we can talk about all these expensive cars. Never able to buy one ourselves.
No, that's right. That's right, yeah.
Go Commodore.
Fionn. Yes, your budget runaround then. Not that you ever get to drive it very much, because you're
really
constantly in press cars. Yeah, look, I think this is a really gallant effort, and I think it really will start the ball rolling.
I just don't like how it looks.
Okay, let's do this.
Well,
let's do this.
I dislike it for the same reason that everybody else seems to love it. I just think it's too full on. It looks like a big toy. It does look powerful. It's got really aggressive styling, but it's just over the top.
But, okay, now it's...
See, that's what I like about it.
Exactly.
I like that element.
Everybody loves that. Whereas I've always preferred understated design. Still has to appear powerful, still has to have, a bit of an intimidating countenance to it.
Yeah.
But for me, that's the M4 or even the regular 4 Series.
Yeah.
Some BMWs bore me to death style-wise, but they've nailed it with the 4 Series and particularly the M4.
Absolutely, yeah. They've got a good balance of sporty but also that sort of just being able to...
It's just class.
Looks great without trying too hard.
Yeah.
Whereas I would agree with you if you said the Lexus, the RC350 is a bit try-hard.
What's the British term? A chav, I guess that's just a bogan here or whatever. You know, somebody hooning around in this thing, that's what I see driving a Lexus RC. So,
and you can get it in this wonderful pearlescent orange colour
and that seems to be the hero colour for all of the press shots as
very
well.
Very showy.
And let me be clear, I actually love Lexus. The IS and the GS both look terrific and really cool cars. Cannot get on board with the RC.
Very quick note before we move on. If you're after power, though, the RCF is on its way.
Yeah.
With a V8.
Ring that up.
It'll be a little bit more money. It'll have even more aggressive styling, and that will go head-to-head with some of the M-powered things and AMG stuff.
And I could overlook a lot for the RCF.
I'm sure
that'll be a
could.
Special car, I think. Might never give me one again.
You're just a man, mate.
We were asking earlier what your favourite iconic movie cars was, and Gary from Brunswick has texted in saying, absolutely agree with the Rolls-Royce thing. A yellow Rolls for a movie car, though. Bit of class, ? Are you telling or asking, Gary? Yeah.
I don't know that would be very classy.
A yellow Rolls-Royce?
What sort of yellow? Like canary yellow? Like a really bold, in your face?
Or that nice sort of pastel mustard yellow.
Do you subscribe to the idea of hero colours for brands?
Yeah, I do, actually.
When I see a yellow Ferrari, that drives me nuts. Yellow is Lamborghini.
It is, absolutely. You know? Or Lotus.
And if I see a red Lamborghini, same deal. That should be a Ferrari.
Do you know, I can't remember last time I saw a red Lamborghini. I don't think I've ever seen one. I think
you probably can't even get it in red.
Probably, yeah. But, that's illegal.
Seeing a red WRX, that should be blue.
Yeah, true.
See a gold wheel. That should be red, et cetera.
This could go on for hours, which we do not have. We're going to have to take a short break. We will be straight back after this. If you want to get in touch, 0427JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. You are with Daniel in the studio today for Fender Bender. I'm joined by Fionn and Mike.
G'day.
And hola. Thanks very much. You know, I'd like that you reintroduced yourselves there. People might have forgotten you were there for 30 seconds.
Buongiorno.
Yeah. Dear, this is another segment which is going to take a while. Before the break, we were talking about something I had driven, which is the RC350 Lexus. Mm. But enough about me and my jolly jaunts throughout the... that's the second or third
your
time
I've
used
ego.
The word jaunt.
Oh, sorry.
We're going to talk about what you guys have been driving. Now, Fionn.
Well, being the resident bogan here, I've been driving a Ford Falcon XR8, the brand new Ford Falcon
I
FGX.
I hate people saying brand new about upgraded cars. I'll let you carry on, but this is...
Excuse me, but it came out of the came off the manufacturing line brand new. Came out of the dealership brand new. Yeah. So pretty sure it's brand new. Fair enough. I can see what you're saying.
Carry on.
But okay, fair enough. It's a
heavily upgraded.
A facelifted model. Yeah, heavily upgraded. So it's got new headlights. It's got these cool LEDs on the front. Mm. And the rear end's been updated too with this new design. And a lot of people think it looks like a Jaguar.
Yeah, an XF at the rear.
Yeah, and it kind of does. And I'm not really sure about it. But, you know, maybe it'll grow on me. I don't love the rear end. I love
the front
end.
The selling point.
Yeah, the front end is yeah.
And more specifically, what's under the front end. Yes. That, of course, is the big
tires,
thing with
mate.
The XR8. Sorry?
Tyres.
Tyres? Yeah. All right. Okay, do I need to spell out parts?
This
you know,
guy.
Is this what I've been reduced to? The bonnet. Thank you, Mike.
Supercharged V8. Yeah.
Fantastic.
We're talking 5-litre supercharged V8. Basically pulled from the previous FPV GTF, the final edition GT. So this thing is a little bit detuned to 335 kilowatts, which is
wonderful.
A huge amount of power,
stonking amount of
in anyone's book. And it absolutely flies. The thing is just awesome off the line. And they've put bigger tyres on the back too. So a problem you had in the previous models is you could floor the throttle and the thing would just spin the wheels and fight with traction control. Whereas now it's got more grip and it's actually much nicer and acceleration's more progressive as well because of that. And yeah, I've been driving around for a few days and I'm absolutely loving it. Beautiful
really?
Sound, heaps of room. It's got a new infotainment system too.
Sync
2. Yeah.
Did you just use that word?
Oh, I use infotainment.
Oh, no, come on.
Can I use edutainment? Is that a word too?
I've just suddenly been overcome with a bout of nausea. I'm so sorry.
But anyway, the new...
The audiovisual entertainment and information system.
The touch
that
screen...
That didn't take that long to
yeah,
say.
The touch screen is fantastic. It is really, really good. Probably one of the best I've seen in any large sedan, whether it's from Germany, Australia, whatever. This thing is great. So
Fionn can't resist a bit of touching when he's in a car he likes.
I do like to touch. So I'm really, really liking the new Falcon. It's the last ever Falcon, which is really, really sad. And we're gonna miss this car when it's gone. Well, I will. And I'll miss them when they're gone from V8 supercars. But that's my take. I love it. So
I think, yeah, I haven't even been in it yet, but I think it's fantastic. I am seeing a lot of criticism of the only lightly updated interior materials and styling. But give them a break. They're not. Nobody in America is saying, "Here, guys, have billions of dollars to completely upgrade your car." That's only going to be around for another 2 years.
They're on a shoestring budget, and what they did with it,
they focused on the most important things. Yeah, absolutely.
Very true. I second the criticism of the cheapy interior, particularly when you look at the steering wheel in the
Look, I'm not saying it's nice. It is unfortunate that we've still got that old interior, but I think we've got to cut them some slack.
However, well, I don't know whether we do, because the counter-argument is, of course, look what they did on a very limited budget for the VF Commodore interior. That is such an up-to-the-minute interior. It's completely new-looking.
Yeah.
Very good quality. Yeah. And they did that on a shoestring as well. So
yeah, you're quite right.
You could argue that that doesn't have a supercharged V8 under the bonnet, and so they just chose their priorities.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, the changes that were made from VE to VF... in an overall sense, probably weren't as extensive, but you'd get a lot of argument there, I guess, as well. Brand new face, brand new tail.
Yeah,
you're right. And it is a better interior in the VF. There's no arguing that.
So, question then. Holden and HSV, Holden Special Vehicles, they recently announced, and I think I've had a go, I know, Fia, I think you drove the GTS Maloo, which is the supercharged 6.2
wicked
V8.
Car. That thing is the most unnecessary car in the world, and I adore it.
Fabulous.
Yes.
So,
yeah, couldn't agree more.
So Holden has proved with its HSV tuning wing that it can put all of that power from 6.2 supercharged V8 through a rear axle in a ute, right? They can do it. Ford is saying we are not going to get an XR8 ute because you can't get the power down through a back axle. Well, we know that's absolutely untrue by demonstration. Yeah. Do you think we're going to get one? Do you think this is just Ford?
Are they not a different design in the rear of both?
What, the suspension layout?
Yeah.
Could well be.
Slightly different, but...
Yeah, I think so. I can't recall.
My take is that they simply don't have the money to develop it.
Yeah.
That would be my take. Look, I hope they do come out in a year's time and say, guess what? We fooled you. He's the baddest supercharged V8 you've ever seen.
Yeah.
But,
which is what I'm hoping they'll do. But
there is the
right.
XR6 turbo in the ute, right?
Yes.
That'll do.
Oh, come on.
Sort of quick.
Are you even Australian?
Sorry, guys.
No, well, okay. Well, hopefully they make an announcement and that we are going to get it. I think they might just be holding off and making us...
Maybe they'll release 50 on the last day.
However, even if they don't do it, you know it will be literally a matter of weeks, and it may have happened already, where someone gets an amateur in their garage, will get a supercharger.
Dump it in.
And just chuck it in.
There
you go, guys. Yep. What was the problem?
Yep.
Oh, just quickly.
And it'll be, yes?
About the XR8, the car has already proved so popular that... demand has outstripped supply. Dealers cannot get enough of these XR8 sedans. So, I mean, the proof's in the pudding. It's
isn't that sad?
It is.
If only they've been able
great
to
if you
that.
Got one.
Yeah, absolutely right.
It's
ask your price.
Bad problem to have sometimes, especially when you're winding down your manufacturing.
Now then, moving on to something else. Mike, you've driven something recently that I'm very interested in. I haven't got my hands on this, and I don't know whether Fian has.
No.
It was the BMW i8, I believe.
Glad you're not talking about the Fiat 500C I had the other day.
It's
not quite as special.
Tell us about the BMW i8. This is an important car for the German manufacturer.
It's tremendous. Yeah, it is an incredible thing. It is very much the future on wheels, really. And the most important thing about it, apart from just looking unreal and driving like a dream, is what it represents for ultra-green cars. It is a plug-in hybrid, so it pairs a very small petrol engine with an electric motor for its motivation, and they can be combined in different ways depending on what you want out of the car. But it makes supercar power in terms of its lightweight construction. It's a super quick car. You could arguably say that it is a rival to the Porsche 911. And that's saying a lot considering it is... It's the same size engine you would find in a Mitsubishi Mirage.
Wow.
But it's just, you know, it's turbocharged and it's mated to a fairly powerful electric motor, all things considered.
Yeah.
And just looking at them roll down the street is astonishing. And
well, that really is, other than its interesting technological innovations, the i8 really is about the way it looks. It is a very unusual looking thing.
Absolutely. And it was a concept a couple of years before it actually launched. It looks like the most outlandishly futuristic thing around, and I've driven some pretty special cars, and I haven't had anywhere near as many looks as I did in that.
Can I just ask a question?
Mm.
I can fit 5 people in a surfboard in my Falcon.
No.
How many can you get in the IA?
No, in your Falcon?
Yeah.
In your Commodore? Oh, your XR8?
The XR8, yeah.
None at all. You've got the glorified parcel shelf back seats.
Oh, so there are back seats?
There are back seats, but
they're
a
gesture, though.
You'd have to saw your children's legs off to put them in.
Not recommended.
No.
Has advantages. No.
They're easier to carry, I suppose.
They are easier to carry, and they can keep wearing the same school uniform trousers for years.
Absolutely. Well, you just buy them the shorts, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Practical thinking.
Yeah. Where are we going with that?
I know, that was a bit creepy. So there is also storage at both ends. There's a front trunk.
I love the frunk.
Yep.
Bring on the frunk.
I couldn't figure out how to open it. Got there in the end, but a bit odd. The rear space is very odd, and that's also where you've got some more mechanical components under there as well. Very, very limited storage. You're not getting a golf bag in the i8, but that's not why you'd buy it. The gull wing doors are why you would buy it. Incredible.
That's James Bond right there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, it was in Mission Impossible, I think, the i8, just before it launched. So it has already starred in a film.
Mission Impossible 12, was that?
I think so. Like that. Well, this is the 24th Bond film. So.
I shouldn't jest, should I?
So maybe that answers the question we were asking earlier. BMW i8 for a Bond car.
Could work.
Could do. BMW been there before?
Well, it's been in an Enemy franchise now, but yeah, could do it.
So how does it drive?
It's just incredible. It's amazing. It's got a, I think, 8-speed dual-clutch auto.
Yeah.
It's rear drive, yeah?
It is.
Sporty?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just... It's glued to the ground. It's got huge wheels, and they're surprisingly wide because you look at the i3, which is their city car thing, and it's got these weird little, very, very narrow tyres on it, and that's obviously to reduce resistance and so on, rolling resistance. So this thing, considering it's supposed to be super green, they've gone out of their way to make it more about power than fuel. I wasn't getting a lot of mileage out of it, I have to say.
Yeah, well, I wonder why that was.
Yeah.
It's because you were driving it like
but
a
But I did have it in electric mode
you
as
had
well.
It promises time? Is that why?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did park it next to a Prius for charging as well, and that is a very interesting comparison side by side, those two cars. Prius being, of course, the original hybrid in terms of
mass production hybrids. That is so cruel, that poor Prius.
Both have massive X factor. I mean, come on, it's a Prius.
Yeah. No, well, I found it really hard when I walked back up to the i8. Which do I want? Do I want to take the Prius or the i8?
Tough choice. Difficult. Challenging. Yeah, absolutely.
So what is the range on it? So it's got a small petrol engine.
The electric range is 37K officially.
So that's not that far, is it, really?
No, it's not at all. But because it's a plug-in hybrid, it also has regenerative ability. So the petrol engine can work to put more power back into the battery or through the generator, so on. It's all a little bit over my head. But so you can actually rebuild the electric driving range on it as you're cruising, so on.
That's pretty cool.
And you said, while we're off air, you said this is the future of motoring, really, you think?
Well, I think everybody in the industry agrees to some extent. Look at all of the hypercars out right now, the LaFerrari, the Porsche 918, the McLaren P1, they all combine an electric motor in some way.
Yeah.
And they'll just keep pushing that as batteries get better and so on.
So there we are.
One day all our supercars will be powered by electricity.
We're not allowed to talk about it right now, but we have all driven the Tesla Model S. We can't say anything about it. The impressions are under embargo at the moment, but that is a very important car, and that continues this trend of electric cars and alternative fuel cars, and I can't wait to talk about that.
It's a two-speed auto in the i8, sorry.
It's got a two-speed axle. That's the interesting thing about it. It's the only car, I believe, the only hybrid car which has actually got more than one speed on its electric motor.
Yeah,
so that's a very unusual feature about it. We had our lovely listener, Gary, who came back in and clarified things with the yellow Rolls-Royce. Apparently, the yellow Rolls-Royce was the name of the movie, and it followed the owners of the car. The movie was a bit naff, says Gary of Brunswick, but the car was classy, so there you have it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, gentlemen, it has come to that time of the day where we have to say sayonara.
No rad cars.
Yes. No. We'll talk about raddest cars. Mike is, of course, referring to our competition we run every year that analyses the offerings of the year from the various manufacturers. We'll be talking about that next week when the lovely Tim Nicholson is back. Until then, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in and being wonderful, as always, for Fender Bender.
Pleasure.
Coming up next is Critical Hit with Luke Mitchell. And all it remains me to say is thank you so much for my guests, particularly Chris, for operating the switches in Studio One today. And until next week, that is me signing off saying, from Fender Bender and Joy 94.9, drive safely.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.